at $71 million in the room, $72 million, $73 million at $73 million.
How do art auctions really work? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. The English muffin, tea with milk in it, cricket, the appropriate response to many things associated with Englishness is usually, why do they do it like that? And so it is with the English auction, the method used to establish value for and sell fine art. Katie Grady of Brandeis and Orly Ashenfelter at Princeton have spent many years investigating how these auctions work. They've summarised what they know in a new version of a discussion paper called, not surprisingly, Art Auctions. And Katie Grady joins us today, and she's going to help me work out where economic theory can help me become a successful art collector and auction buyer. Katie, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
The English auction uses a set of rules and norms that apply to everyone who wants to take part in buying some art at Sotheby's or Christie's. So, first of all, what am I going to need to know if I'm going to bid for a painting?
Well, you should know about the art, and you should have done your homework. For example, make sure that the painting has clear provenance. And it would be good to know if it has appeared at auction at any other times. And if so, what price it sold at. You might want to look at the high and the low estimate. That's just to get a feel for where the auction house thinks it might trade. But of course, they could be wrong and the painting could go for a much higher price than the high estimate or a little bit lower than the low estimate. So once you've understood the painting, probably the two other most important things to understand about auctions is that paintings almost always have a reserve price below which the seller will not sell the painting. Now, reserve prices are important because about 70% of paintings at auction actually go unsold. That's an average over many, many years. So you may think that you've bought the painting, or think that even though nobody else is bidding against you, you have bought the painting. But if there's a reserve price, the painting will not be sold. The second thing you should understand is the structure of buyer's commissions. Most likely, the price that you end up paying will be about 25% higher than what you bid, the difference going to the auction house.
Clearly, as an economist, the first step for me is going to be to look up our standard economic model of optimal auctions and read the theory. How useful is this going to be?
Well, I think there are interesting things about the theory. Whether or not it's actually useful might be up for debate. So what do I think is interesting? And in fact, what do I tell my classes when I teach about auction theory? For example, an item is sold at approximately the price at which the second highest bidder is willing to pay. So it's not actually sold at the price that the highest bidder is willing to pay. Think about it. Even if you were willing to pay $1.5 million for a painting, why do it if the second highest bid is only $1 million? You will only bid as much as you have to. In this case, that would be just a little bit over $1
million. I've been looking at the catalogue for Christie's for the next couple of weeks, and Artichokes and Tomatoes in a Landscape by Luis Melendez is coming up for auction. I'm very partial to artichokes, so now I really want to buy it. As an economist, I've decided my first bid is going to be $1 more than that reserve price you mentioned. But for some reason, I can't find the reserve price online. Where is it published? Where should I look for it?
Well, the reserve price isn't actually published. In fact, the auction houses go to a lot of trouble to keep it secret. The auctioneer might have it written down in his special book, but it won't be published to the customers. So some people think that auction houses keep it secret to prevent collusion among buyers. I don't think there's a good theory out there as to why it is so secretive, other than perhaps to prevent collusion. But you can get hints about the reserve price. For example, it is always set at or below the low estimate. So when you see in the auction book a low estimate for the painting, you know that the reserve price is going to be either at that price or a little bit below it. There is some evidence that the reserve price is on average probably about 15% below the low estimate. But again, in some cases, the reserve price is at the low estimate, and in other cases, it could be more than 15% below the low estimate.
I also note that as a buyer, I'm going to have to pay a commission. I was looking at these commissions. They're quite big. I would have thought that competitive pressure between the auction houses and new entrants would have bargained away these commissions hundreds of years ago, but that's not happened, and they've stayed the same. Why have they not been bargained away?
In fact, what has happened is that auction houses compete furiously in order to have the privilege of selling a particular painting, especially important paintings. Therefore, sellers' commissions can be zero or even negative. For example, sellers could negotiate to receive a portion of the buyer's commission or, say, a donation to charity. Sometimes auction houses might even guarantee a price to a seller, called an auction guarantee. But once the auction house actually has the painting to sell, they have a monopoly on that particular painting. Hence, buyers simply aren't very sensitive when they come to buyer's commissions, especially if they want a particular painting.
I've been warned that if I'm too enthusiastic when I bid, the auctioneers will pretend that someone's bidding against me to make me pay more. Does this happen?
That's illegal. And I don't believe it happens at any of the top auction houses.
There's a lot of interesting slang in auctions. And one of those terms is that something that hasn't sold, as you mentioned before, is burned. So if artichokes and tomatoes doesn't meet its reserve price at the auction in a couple of weeks, the lower valuation that bidders like me have given, surely this is new information and it's going to be used by buyers and sellers in future to value it lower and paintings like it if it comes up again. Is that what happens?
Well, yes. In fact, paintings that have come up for auction and do not sell are valued lower than other paintings. We did research that showed that on average, paintings that successfully sold twice in a row sold for significantly more on average in the second sale than paintings that failed to sell in between two successful sales. So you can think about a series of sales. You can think of sold, sold, so two auctions in a row where the painting sold. You could think of sold, a painting comes up to auction, fails, and then it comes up again and it sells. So that painting's been up three times, selling twice with the failure in the middle. Well, the paintings that did not sell, that is, that failed during auction and were therefore burned, sold for about 30% less than other paintings in the second successful sale. In the trade, it is known that paintings are burnt. And I think that there is hard evidence that if a painting isn't sold at auction, a lot of the buyers think that something's wrong with it. There's a really famous law case about this called Kristalina. The case took place in 1981. And in that sale, Christie's handled the sale, and about 7 out of the 8 paintings failed to sell. The owner of the painting sued Christie, claiming that the sale was badly handled and their paintings were irreparably harmed, burned. In a way, that was a test of what the courts thought of this idea of paintings being burnt. As is usual, the case was settled out of court, so we don't have a real resolution of that.
You mentioned the valuation in the catalogue. I noticed that for artichokes and tomatoes, the valuation's between 2 million and 4 million. Does this valuation affect the sales price? Because if it did, then there's a huge incentive for the auction house to put on a high valuation and maybe anchor the price at a higher level.
Well, this is a repeated game, meaning that auctions happen over and over and over again. And these auction houses have been in business since the 18th century. Since this is a repeating game and most buyers are sophisticated, auctions really don't have any incentive to systematically overvalue a painting. In fact, some auctioneers might even say that they would prefer to put a lower estimate on a painting in order to stimulate interest. So think about it. If you go to an auction and you see a painting that's valued very high, you might not even show up at the auction at all. So I don't think there's actually strong evidence that auctioneers overvalue paintings.
I'm pretty sure that I'm going to get this painting, and I also want to buy some fine wine to serve to my friends when they come round to see my picture. And I see that down the road at Sotheby's, they're selling some Rusden Black Guts Shiraz 2003, and that sounds a lot of fun. But some of the lots are exactly the same. So should I buy the first case that comes up or wait to the end to bid in this auction?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You must have heard about the declining price anomaly. Mm. What is the declining price anomaly? Well, it's when identical cases of wine that sell later in an auction, on average, sell at a lower price than items that sell earlier in an auction. A version of this idea works for paintings also. The price to average estimate ratio, remember, the auction house estimates the price of the paintings, on average declines throughout the auction, okay? But of course, different paintings are sold at the beginning than at the end. So you can think about, if you have a line and you think about the price versus the average estimate, that ratio is going to be high in the beginning and it's going to be lower at the end of the auction. But again, it's really hard to take advantage of this because, you know, you might not want the paintings at the end of the auction. But there is this idea, and in many situations, that items that are sold at the end tend to be, on average, not all the time, and it might be small, but sold for slightly less than paintings that sold at the beginning. And they call this an anomaly because items that are identical, like wine, cases of wine, there's no real reason why this should be the case.
Is there evidence that the auction houses structure their auctions to take advantage of this or to prevent it causing too much of a problem to the sellers?
If you look over many auctions, on average, the higher priced items will be sold toward the beginning and the lower priced items would be sold toward the end. I believe they structure their auctions because they want to build excitement. People are more awake in the beginning. In fact, the highest items aren't sold first. They're usually sold about a third of the way through the auction. So I don't think that when auctioneers are putting together an auction, they necessarily think, oh no, there's this declining price anomaly and we're going to try and hide it. I think it's very small, but there is this idea that the more expensive items are sold earlier in an auction.
Finally, Katie, if I'm a buyer, why would I ever go to an auction? Because I can use the free information that I get from sales prices as my guide to market value and then go and do my business in private and then I avoid paying a commission.
Well, it kind of depends what you want to buy. So for paintings, remember, a painting's unique. If you really wanted to buy Leonardo da Vinci's Salvator Mundi, which recently sold for about $450 million.
It's a bit out of my league, yes.
Yes, okay. You're going to have to buy that at auction. So for paintings, I mean, I'm not so sure that this is such a useful concept. However, in some other markets, for example, used cars and fish, the prices sold at auction do have a large effect on other transactions. You might not have to go to the used car auction in order to take advantage of the price that is revealed through the auction mechanism.
But of course, it causes a problem if everybody skips the auction and goes and does their business in private, because then we don't know what the price should be.
Well, yes, in the limit, that would actually be the case, though there are disincentives also to doing it in private. For example, you might not know what the price should be, and going to an auction at least gives you some sort of idea of what might be a good price for the item.
Katie, thank you. I think if I am ever genuinely in the market for this, you might have saved me a lot of money.
I hope so. Good luck with your art purchases.
Thank you. The paper is called Art Auctions. If you also want to become an expert in buying at English auctions, I'll see you there. It's by Katie Grady and Ollie Ashenfelter. And on the CEPR website, it is discussion paper 13665. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. There's a new episode every week featuring research that you don't see every day. So subscribe on your podcast platform or look up the archive at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.